Hey everybody, thanks for listening to this episode of My First Sketch at MyFirstSketch.com. I'm Josh Hyam. Any questions, thoughts, recommendations, feel free to email me at josh@myfirstsketch.com, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. Like the podcast on Facebook at facebook.com/myfirstsketch. It'd be really cool if you rate it 5 stars and leave a review on whatever platform you get the podcast. We're moving full steam ahead towards Philly Sketch Fest 2024, which will take place with live shows happening from May 31st to June 8th. Submissions to perform live are open at phillysketchfest.com/submit2024, and you can submit your short films for the film festival, which will take place on June 5th at phillysketchfest.com/film2024. If you wanted to volunteer or join the staff, you can also head to phillysketchfest.com/volunteer for all of that information. Even with our own festival happening, we're looking ahead to our friends at DC Sketchfest, which starts next week, March 20th through the 23rd. Head to DC Sketchfest for all their details. 4 nights of shows, it'll be a good time. But today's guest is Yenna Frick, currently a member of Forevermore Sketch out of Baltimore, Maryland. Forevermore Sketch is performing at DC Sketchfest on Wednesday, March 20th in the 7:30 block, along with Bring Your Own Bob. And we just announced that those two acts, Forevermore and Bring Your Own Bob, will be coming to Philadelphia on Friday, March 22nd at 8 p.m. at the Skinner Studio at Plays and Players for a show called Philly Sketchfest Presents. PhillySketchfest.com for tickets for that show. It's going to be a great one. Yenna's first sketch is called Kiss the Girl. Yenna and I play a couple on a first date. Yenna also reads the guy's friend, Carl, and I read the woman's friend, Tammy, as well as give you all the visual information. So let's go to the sketch. Lights up on a bench, place center. A couple walks on stage, hand in hand.
Oh my gosh, that was so much fun. You really know how to show a girl a good time.
No, it was nothing.
No, dinner, dancing, then a moonlit walk in the park. I had no idea you were such a romantic.
They sit down. Well, I tried to hide that side of me from the guys.
Well, you shouldn't. I think it's sweet. Most guys wouldn't go all out for a first date.
Well, it's easy to do for a girl like you. There's silence. They stare at each other like they're about to kiss when suddenly Kiss the Girl from The Little Mermaid starts to play. The boy and girl notice the music and look confused. Carl emerges from somewhere on stage. The couple does not see him.
There you see her, sitting there across the way. She don't got a lot to say, but there's something about her. And you don't know why, but you're dying to try. You want to kiss the girl.
Carl hides behind the couple just as they turn in his direction.
What the hell is going on?
The boy shrugs, and they continue to look around. Carl slowly emerges again.
Yes, you want her. Look at her, you know you do.
The boy and girl suddenly see Carl and scream.
It's possible she wants you to. There's one way to ask her. It don't take a word, not a single word. Go on and kiss the girl. Sha-la-la-la-la-la, don't stop now.
Carl, what the hell? You promised you wouldn't do this again.
Come on, bro. I'm just trying to help you get to second base. I don't understand. You know him?
Yeah, he's supposed to be my friend. Sing with me now.
Oh, no, Tammy, please don't do this again.
Sha-la-la-la-la-la, my oh my, look at the boy too shy. He ain't gonna kiss the girl. Boy and girl exit.
Sha-la-la-la-la-la, ain't that sad? Ain't it a shame? Too bad. You gonna miss the girl.
Carl and Tammy come closer together and have a moment and share the most awkward, revolting kiss ever. Blackout.
My name is Samantha Russell. I'm a sketch comedian, and I have a prop and costume hoarding problem. So I figured the best way to get it under control is to start a podcast. On Should I Keep This? I chat with other comedians about their experiences in comedy and our insane prop and costume collections. And on each episode, we both bring a beloved item to discuss whether it's a treasure or just trash. Sometimes it turns out no matter how much money or time we spent on a prop, the only thing we should be holding on to are the memories we've made along the way. So check out Should I Keep This? We have new episodes every 2 weeks, available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Anna.
Hi.
So, all right. So tell me about the sketch. Where did this idea come from?
So I grew up loving Disney, and I remember I was like kind of watching The Little Mermaid, like back in college. We were having like a movie night with my sorority, and I remember seeing this scene in the Disney movie, and I was thinking like, man, that'd be so freaking weird if somebody just started like pushing people to like kiss each other on the first date, like really like getting them to kiss each other. And I kind of thought about, you know, what if that actually happened? What if a friend was doing that to like their friend to like really try and help push things along and you know, make sure that the date is going well. So then I sat down, I started writing this, and this is what came out. So
I think it's really funny. Well, first off, like, and this was written according to the actual document. This was written like 2012.
Yes, I was in college. This was from my sketch comedy group in college. I think I was like end of my sophomore year, something like that. So this is a long time ago.
So so this was even before the, you know, the live action movie came back out, and apparently they rewrote the lyrics in this song, or at least a couple of pieces of it for the live action.
Oh, you know, I think I did hear that. Admittedly, I'm so sorry. Don't shame me, but I haven't seen it yet.
Me neither. Like,
okay. It is on my list. Don't you worry. But yeah,
I just remember that there was like a thing about, and I forget what the exact lyric is, and I'm sure it's.
Yeah, I think it was something about like making sure that like it was a consensual kiss, which yes, I am all about that.
But I believe we actually sang the lyrics that got replaced.
Did we? Oh,
I think
no.
So. I think it is that like it don't take a word, not a single word, go on and kiss the girl. I think.
Oh yeah, like there's one way to ask her, and it's just to kiss her. Yeah, that's not cool.
Right. Yeah. Because the new lyrics are use your words, boy, and ask her if the time is right and the time tonight. Go on and kiss instead of what we sang.
Okay, that's a much better lyric than what we sang. But again, like you said, I wrote this in 2012, way before the live action came out. So.
But it's also funny to me that like. Can in the cartoon, does Eric hear the crab?
I don't think so. Like, there's literally, this is part of the reason why
it's been forever since I've seen Little Mermaid. So
there is one moment where like when he like with the Sebastian the crab whispers in his ear, kiss the girl, and he goes, did you hear something? And Ariel just goes, oh, I don't know. So I think that they do, but like they kind of don't, which is why I wrote it this way, where like they're just kind of minding their own business on this bench hanging out, and then suddenly they're like, do you hear music? What the hell is going on? Because
So you said it was written and performed for a college sketch team. So how did it go when it was performed? Do you remember?
It was great. Like, so this was in the very first show that we had performed as a sketch group in college. So I went to James Madison, and there actually wasn't a sketch group when I got there, and I started the one there. It's called Maddie Night Live, and it's actually still up and running to this day, which is pretty cool. And so this sketch was in our very first show that we put on for the university. And, you know, we had a huge crowd. It went really well. As soon as like the Little Mermaid song started playing, everyone started losing their shit because they were like, it was a lot of like my friends who were in my sorority, who like all love Disney and stuff like that. So it went over really well. And then at this time, in my writing career, I guess I like was fascinated and loved the idea of just like having a really disgusting like kiss or something, or like somebody like throwing up. Like, that to me is so funny. And
if you're gonna do a comedy kiss, like if there's gonna be a kiss in a comedy scene, it's gotta be as gross as possible.
Right? It's gotta be nasty.
Like,
so at this time I wrote a couple different sketches where like part of it was like a gross kiss. And so when this happened, I played the girl, and a good friend of mine played the boy, and we're like, okay, we're really gonna sell this. It was great.
So what's the, like, you get to JMU, what motivates you to start a sketch team?
Well, so I love comedy. I've always done like, you know, like little like silly like shows with my sister, like in the basement or something like that, like when we were growing up. And I was a theater kid. I did improv in high school. And I was like, okay, I definitely want to do this in college. So at JMU, I actually auditioned for the improv team twice, made it through to callbacks and everything, but then didn't get on the group. And I was kind of like, you know, I still really want to find a way to be able to do comedy and participate in comedy at school. And there wasn't another improv group or comedy group. And I realized that JMU didn't have a sketch group. So I was like, maybe I can just like make one. And I met a couple people through improv auditions that I thought would be fun to work with. So I reached out to them, did some research, and then did all the paperwork, put in the legwork, and made a sketch group. And it ended up being really awesome because even though I wasn't on the improv team, we actually partnered with the improv team for a couple different like duo comedy shows while we were there. And we actually both went to a comedy festival down in North Carolina just to perform and travel and keep doing comedy and stuff. So yeah, like, I don't know. It was just one of those things. I was motivated by a void that I just wanted to fill. So I'm like, if no one else is going to do it, I guess I'll do it. You know?
I mean, that's crazy. Like initiative to, for you to like, screw it. I'll start myself. Like,
yeah, well, I'm a Virgo. So
I don't think I would have had that. I mean, I definitely didn't have that intuition of like, hey, let's just start this. Like, I don't think I would have even like known where to begin.
Oh, I asked a lot of questions and did a lot of research and worked with a couple of different faculty advisors to like help me get it going. But yeah, and it was great. And like I said, it's still going strong. They're called Maddie Night Live at JMU, and I follow them on Instagram, and they're doing great.
Very cool. I'm all about college sketch. Like, let's do it. All right. So let's go back to the beginning. What, like, do you have like an earliest memory of comedy? Like what was the first time like you saw something on TV or a movie that you were like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Like,
You know, I was a Nickelodeon kid. I wasn't just a Disney kid. I was also a Nickelodeon kid where I watched all the Nickelodeon shows, and probably watching like the Amanda Show and all that. I was fascinated by just how they did all that stuff and were kind of like goofy and silly. And my sister and I a lot would get together and like kind of like emulate like that, try to put together our own style of sketches like that. So when was that? We were definitely like in elementary school or something like that. I was put in theater pretty like, young.
What generation of all that is this? Like,
It was the one where Kenan and Kel were on it. It was
okay, so it was still that early, that original.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was probably season like 2 though, because I remember Amanda Bynes being on it, and she was not in the first season of all that. In case you're wondering about, you know, the lore of Nickelodeon sketch shows. So, but yeah, this is a while ago, and that was definitely one of the first memories that I have in seeing like, wow, that's really funny. These kids are doing this. I think I could do this. And, you know, I would try to do that, write sketches and stuff like that when I was younger. They wouldn't go anywhere except for maybe like we had like a video camera. So like somewhere in like the piles of VHS tapes in my parents' basement, there's some crazy sketch stuff that my sister and I and a couple of our friends did way back when we were younger. So
like if they're still there.
Yeah, who knows?
And you had mentioned like being a theater kid and doing improv in high school. Like what kind, like, was it like, was there like an improv club at your high school? Like, were you doing short form Whose Line Games?
So get this. I actually started the improv group at my high school because we didn't have one and I wanted one. I took theater class as like an elective, and we would do short form improv games, you know, as just like warm up stuff or like things to do to kill time. And I was like, I really like doing this. I would like to keep doing this. So I started an improv group at my high school, and we did mostly short form stuff. And then I actually was also on all county improv for Howard County. I grew up in Howard County, Maryland. I was on all county improv, which took 2 kids from each high school in the county to get together and form a sketch group. So I did that. And that was also short form stuff. So I grew up doing that style of improv.
Wait, what? There's a county improv?
Yup. In Howard County, there's an all-county improv.
Some of these things like surprise me when I hear about like people having improv in high school. Like in Canada, there's like an actual like improv competition that's like nationwide.
In Canada?
Yeah. For like high school students. And
That's awesome.
I've talked to multiple people from multiple cities in Canada that have all participated in this. And I'm just like, what is happening? All right. I'm always curious about people that were like theater kids in high school because I was not. Is there a favorite role that you did from your time in high school?
Oh, man. High school, I have to think about. My favorite role ever was outside of high school. I did a community theater play. I did Avenue Q, comedy, puppets, singing, all that. I was Kate Monster. I did that the year after I graduated college. I came back and did like some community theater stuff, and that was the best. In high school,
We can talk about Avenue Q all you want. Like,
I know, right? That was one of those ones where like I've always wanted to be that. No, in high school, actually, so like my senior year of high school, we did Once Upon a Mattress, and I played the king in that, which if you're not familiar with that, that role does not speak. Everything they do is pantomimed. Okay. And usually like that role is kind of just like, you know, just kind of like a whatever, here's like an extra character. But they gave the role to me, so I was in drag the whole time, which is kind of incredible. And that character interacts with the court jester a lot. And my friend was cast as the court jester. And he and I kind of figured out ways that we could really just kind of make the role and like the duo between us like bigger. And we ended up like absolutely stealing the show with it, which was pretty funny. So it was a really good time. And there's a video somewhere of the two of us doing this like crazy like dance that I actually wasn't supposed to be in, but I learned it anyway. And then we did it in the show. So that was probably my favorite one. It was a good way to end high school, I guess, with my senior year.
But you get to play Kate Monster in this Avenue Q. Like, yes. Avenue Q is one of my favorite shows.
Oh, like, awesome.
And because I do have a little bit of like love for musical theater. Like, I'm not obsessive. I haven't seen everything, but I will see it if it comes in town. But I saw a community production of Avenue Q, and I think they broke the one rule of Avenue Q to make the show like decent, and that Christmas was not an Asian woman.
I was about to say, did they make Christmas not Asian?
Yeah, that's like, it was very much a light-skinned black woman playing, but like it was still full everything about Christmas, and I'm just like, this doesn't feel okay.
Yeah,
like it was one of those parts of it, like they might have wanted to wait for an Asian woman to audition for this.
Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, like, that's one of those shows where like you really have to have somebody in mind to do it, because if you don't, you're just kind of taking a chance. You're taking a chance, you know? Like,
I think the whole part of it is like, especially with material like that, like if you have someone of that race playing it, makes it feel okay, and like that they're in on the joke of it. And immediately, once it's not an Asian woman, it no longer feels like it's a fun bit of racism. It's
being racist and punching down. Like, yes.
The show was great other than that one decision that permeates the entire show.
Well, we had a woman of Asian descent Christmas Eve when I was in it. So
how was it to work with puppets? Like, was that like the first time that you had like?
It actually wasn't the first time. Okay. This was the third time I had worked with puppets, actually, because I was in a production of Little Shop of Horrors. I was a doo-wop girl on one night, and then on the other night, I was the puppeteer for The Plant.
Okay.
So I got to do that, which was cool. And then I also was in a touring children's theater production of Puff the Magic Dragon, and I was the puppeteer for the Magic Dragon. So that was kind of cool. I got to like move the head and everything. And then Avenue Q was the third time I worked with puppets. And at that, I fucking love working with puppets. So it was not just like a dream come true to like be in Avenue Q, but also getting to be Kate Monster and work in a puppet the whole time. It was so much fun. Yeah. And like, it's really interesting because, you know, it's like, you know, Muppet style puppet. So you have to find a way for it to be expressive, but like, you know, having kind of the same face a little bit. So you work a lot with like the gestures and how you like move your hand to like react to something and all that stuff. And then additionally, like not to have yourself or your own face like be distracting, because when you have these puppets, it's not like, you know, Sesame Street where you don't see the puppeteer, you see the puppeteer on stage the whole time. So it was interesting to kind of like strike the balance of like making sure that the puppet is expressive and I am also matching that energy without being distracting, because the focus should be on the puppet, right?
Right, right. I shouldn't be like, as much as you're there, I shouldn't be watching you as Kate Monster's talking. Like,
exactly. So
is there a role that you'd want to do that you haven't done yet?
Oh my gosh, I would love to be Roxy Hart in Chicago, because she's got that, she's got the comedy bits along with like the dancing bits and like the singing bits. Like I would love to play that.
There seems to be a huge gap between Maddie Night Live to starting up Forevermore. So how are you feeling your performance, comedy, like needs in that time?
Yeah. So I graduated from college. So left Maddie Night Live behind, passed it on. I did some community theater. That's when I did like Avenue Q and stuff. And then, I actually attempted to start a sketch comedy group, like right after I moved back home after college, but you know, for those who have never done sketch comedy before, it's really, really difficult to have it like really come together. Like the stars really have to align. Like not only do you have to have a really great, reliable group of people, you have to spend a good chunk of time writing. You have to find a space that like can accommodate that. You know, you can't like, so you can't always just like go to do like stand up and go to like some bar and like set up, you know, a microphone. You have to have the space to do it. And on top of that, there's also additional, you know, production aspects. Depending on the scripts that you write, you might need props, you might need costumes. It's a really ambitious form of comedy to pull off. And really, you have to have all the elements kind of together in a really good, solid, reliable group. And so I attempted to start a sketch comedy group right after college. And, you know, I was still figuring out, you know, college student to real adult life and stuff. So figuring that out and then trying to find a group of people that would work well together. And, you know, when you do comedy, you can't just work together. You also kind of have to have that like friendship bond to really produce some great stuff, or at least that's how I work my best, is when I'm working with people that I'm like friends with, like to hang out with, all that stuff. And it kind of just fizzled. It was one of those things where people just kept saying, oh, I'm busy, I got to do this, I got to do that, can we cancel, can we reschedule? And I was thinking, you know, maybe now is not the right time. So I kind of put that to bed. I did some improv stuff. I took a few classes at Baltimore Improv Group, met some people there, started an indie troupe for improv where we did kind of this like swarm style long form thing, where everyone would only play two characters throughout the entire thing, but you can edit and wipe anytime, which was pretty fun. That was something that we kind of came up with. And then I was doing that. I got on an improv troupe called Banana Phone and did that for a little while. And I gave stand-up a try, which I do like. I still do that every now and then. But yeah, so I had been doing that as like the in-between for the however many years it was between Maddie Night Live sketch comedy and Forevermore sketch comedy. And then it wasn't until like 2 years ago. So 2 years ago, I auditioned for a play at Spotlighters in Baltimore. It was a parody of the Harry Potter books called Puffs, if anyone's ever heard of that before. So it's all seven books told from the perspective of the
Hufflepuffs. Yeah, I've never seen it, but I've heard of it. I've seen like things about it.
It's a very fast-paced, very fun show. So I auditioned for that and I got onto that and met this really awesome group of people there. Everyone just bonded instantly doing that show. And, you know, we were all like performing together, making props together, really working super well together. And then I think it was like December of 2022, you know, we had finished like the show and everything a few months prior. And I was going through some old sketches that I had written just because like sometimes I like to just like write even though I know it's not going anywhere. And I was looking at kind of my archive of stuff that I had written and realized that a lot of the sketches were very much kind of relationship themed or dating themed or, you know, just like women trying to like make their way through this world type of stuff. And I was like, you know, it's December. I bet you if I got the right people together, I could put together a Galentine's Day theme show. Mm. And so I reached out to all the women who were in Puffs with me. And I was like, hey, if I wanted to write a 90-minute sketch comedy show about Galentine's Day, would you guys be in it? And they were like, yeah, say less. Let's do it.
Why do you think, it's just looking at convergence of the people that you had met doing Puffs? Why that worked out better than your previous attempt to get people around? Like,
yeah, I think it was absolutely that as the main thing. Just like that was the right group of people to do this with. I knew right away that I definitely wanted to work with these people again. Like, it wasn't going to be a, oh, we're in the show, that's great, cast party, now let's all go our separate ways and never talk again except for liking each other's stuff on Facebook. You know, no, this was like a group that was like really great, like not just like super talented, but really awesome, amazing people just to hang out with and to work with, and great work ethic. And I was like, this is right. This feels right. I feel like this is a group that would be really great to put something creative and fun and magical together, you know? And so it was that as the main thing. But then the other piece of it is that, you know, I had been, you know, doing stuff in the Baltimore comedy scene at this point for, you know, like 7 or 8 years. So I had a couple different connections in, you know, the improv world and the stand-up world and the theater world. And so, you know, I knew the people who run Fells Point Corner Theater because I was in a show there the year prior. So I just reached out and was like, you know, would this be a good spot for us to put on this production? What are the steps I would need to take? And then as soon as they said, yeah, here's what we can give you, here's what it will require, and this is all the production aspects you'll get, what date do you want? I was like, great. It seems like like I said, the stars kind of aligned a little bit. And it was just the right time, the right people in the right place.
Yeah, I'm a little like, there's probably a little jealous of that. Like, it seems how easy this one came around. Like, I mean, it's good that you had like all the connections from performing in other spots, but like to have a venue be like, yeah, we'll put on your show, let's do it. Like, like, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, so Fells Point Corner Theater is like a really, it's a really awesome space in general, just for like artists to do anything, because it's actually, it was converted from an old fire station. So it's like 4 stories high. They have a main stage on the first floor. They have like a secondary stage on the second floor and then a rehearsal space on the third floor. So, I really lucked out in the sense that they could be performing like a main stage show or getting a main stage show ready on the first floor. And then we can have the second floor and put on an equally as amazing production just with a slightly smaller theater. So yeah, just like I said, it was great kind of making those connections and realizing, wow, this space would be great because scheduling would be a lot easier because it's not just one stage that they have to offer.
And that's what I am with the one venue here in the city. I was like, I know you have multiple spaces, multiple rooms. Why can't I use that little room when you're doing something else in the big room? Like, come on, like, please. Like, yeah. That was one of the big things about comedy in Philadelphia, is that a lot of the venues were very hesitant about certain things getting started after the pandemic. So it took forever for things to jumpstart, and it's still not perfect yet.
Yeah. That pesky pandemic just had to go and ruin everything. But like, seriously though, it was really hard to bounce back. in a lot of ways.
Well, and like, I mean, even in Baltimore, like, I mean, you mentioned doing improv and trying out stand up, but like, what is the scene like in Baltimore now? Because it's because pre-pandemic, I knew of Baltimore Improv Group and Charm City County Project out of hanging out at Zissimos, which, as much as I love that there was a space to perform in, it's not the best space for comedy.
Yeah.
I don't really know what's happening in Baltimore now.
So Baltimore Improv Group is still really prevalent, going strong, all that stuff. They put on shows pretty much every weekend, if not like basically every, like almost every night of the week, I think. I'm not as involved with Baltimore Improv Group as I used to be, but they have a new space with a really nice like black box theater type thing. And they put on really great shows there. And then Charm City Comedy Project kind of, it was a thing, and then ended up being taken over by another comedian who was basically the booker for the Lou Room at Zissimos. And part of his kind of just takeover of that project, they revamped the Zissimos space to be a little more conducive to doing comedy. The stage is pretty small, so it's definitely a lot better for stand-up, which is what it was primarily used for. There were some improv shows. Like on Saturdays, it was a mix of stand-up and improv. And then on Thursdays, it was mostly improv, some stand-up. And then Fridays, it was all stand-up. And then there was an open mic every Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But recently, very recently, like in December, Zissimos is kind of like decided to move away from doing comedy shows there every weekend. So like they're doing a lot more music shows. So that whole scene all kind of migrated a little bit over to Bluebird in their green room, which is across the street, which is an excellent space for doing any form of comedy. I just did, Forevermore just did a show at that, at Bluebird. And then we did another one, the Body Storytelling, which is a nationally touring performance thing where they grab people to come on and tell stories about like their sex lives and sexuality and stuff like that. And they actually tapped Forevermore to come and do three different musical acts about like sex. So we did that at Bluebird. So Bluebird kind of took over, but the Zissimos comedy stuff kind of migrated over there. And then of course, you know, you have like Magoobies and stuff where people do stand up. You have a couple different open mics, around the area. And then a space that recently opened up is called The Port, which is run by a local comic that's in, Fells Point. And that's also a really cool space. It's a pretty small room, but they have a nice stage set up and a bar and everything. So that's a pretty new spot, but that's mostly stand up. But anyways, that's a very long-winded way of saying in Baltimore, we have a small but mighty comedy scene. We have lots of really talented people, but it leans very much towards more improv and stand-up than sketch. As far as I know, like I think Forevermore is the only sketch comedy group that I know that's like regularly performing sketch. I know that there are some groups that do sketch here and there, or they like get like random groups of people together to do a sketch thing here and there. I know Big has done that a few times, but otherwise, you know, I'm trying to make sketch comedy come back to Baltimore.
That's what's like when I saw y'all were announced for DC for sketch fest, I was like, oh cool, there's still something happening in Baltimore. Like great cool, like, because I don't like little cities having nothing.
Definitely.
So at least when there's something happening, there's a ray of hope for me.
Absolutely.
All right, so bridge the gap, like, so from that Galentine show, bridge from that to Forevermore, like, is it all the same people? Just
yes,
just keep going without this theme. All right, let's talk about Galentine's first. So yeah, you had the idea of doing it. Did you have the group together from that previous show, from, you know, from that theater production, and then you got the time? Or did you get the time at the theater and be like, all right, now I have to hustle and like make sure my friends are cool with this?
So essentially what I did is I just kind of like messaged all of them and was like, hey, if I write a 90-minute comedy show, will you guys be in it? And they were like, yes. I was like, cool. And then as soon as they all said yes, I went out, tried to book the space. I had a little bit of trouble at first because I didn't go to Fells Point Corner Theater first. I went to a different one. And then Fells Point Corner Theater kind of just appeared. And I was like, great, can I use this one? And they were like, yes. And they gave us a date. And then I had about, I want to say like 40 some pages written already, but for a 90-minute show, I needed to write like 90. So I got with these girls, did some brainstorming, wrote some more stuff. Christy, who I believe you're going to be talking to later, wrote her own thing for that show also. And, you know, we put on we initially only had one night and then ended up selling it out so fast that we added a second show that night, which was awesome. Yeah. So we did that. We had so much fun doing it. It ended up being just so successful. And I was like, I would really like to keep doing this. Would you guys want to put a sketch group together that just does this regularly? And they were like, yeah, totally. So we had gotten into a comedy festival out in LA. And that was kind of the genesis for me being like, okay, this is great. And I love that we're doing this Galentine's theme. Let's see if we can like rebrand ourselves into something that's a little more evergreen, something that represents Baltimore a little bit because we're a Baltimore sketch group. And so after that comedy festival, we kind of got together, did some brainstorming and created Forevermore. Which if you didn't realize, it's an Edgar Allan Poe reference where it's the Raven says nevermore, but we wanted to make it a little bit different. So we became Forevermore.
Yeah, I assumed that there was a nod to Poe in there.
Yeah. Well, I was like, that was at first we were like throwing that title out and someone was like, isn't everyone going to think that's like a Taylor Swift song? And I was like, first of all, that's Evermore. This is Forevermore. But yeah, so essentially Forevermore was born out of me wanting to put on a Galentine's Day show and having it just end up turning out so well that I just wanted to keep doing it. And, you know, like I said, the stars kind of aligned where I found the right group of people and they all were willing to do it and wanted to do it. And, you know, the rest is history.
I mean, first off, like if you're going to trick the Swifties into coming out to your show, go for it. It's fine.
Exactly.
For one, that's okay. You kept mentioning that like that Galentine show was a 90-minute thing. And there's a part of me that's like, why did you do that? Like, why did you settle on 90 minutes? Like a 60-minute show would have been perfectly fine. Like that just feels so much more than needs to be and so daunting to me to put on a 90-minute show.
I'm very ambitious. You can't tell. I don't know. I like really wanted to stretch myself to do it. And like, for me, yeah, 60 minutes would have been totally fine. Here's an hour show. But I come from, you know, a theater background, a musical theater background. A lot of times shows are in 90 minutes. And I was thinking, you know, if I'm going to charge tickets for this, I want to make the ticket price worth it. I want every single sketch to be funny and polished and good to go. And I want it to be a full show. Like, not that 60 minutes isn't a full show, it can be, but I wanted to push that extra mile, like not just for the audience, but also for myself to kind of challenge myself. Because like I said, I only had about like maybe half the show written when I decided to do it. And I had like a month and a half to write the rest of it. And that was just like a great personal challenge for me to do. And a really great way to like have it. Like, even though I wrote a lot of it and I wrote like half of it before I met this group of women, the other half was all through brainstorming efforts from all of us. So that way it's not just, you know, my show that I'm bringing people in. It's our show that we all work together on, you know, which was important to me and to them, because that's how you get the buy-in. And I feel like that's also how I was able to really be like, hey, let's all keep doing this. Look how great and collaborative we work together.
Right. One of the recurring themes I have with people that like, especially when they grow up as theater kids doing just, you know, doing the plays in high school. One of the hallmarks for sketch comedy is that you get to generate your own material. So instead of just performing, you know, plays that are 40, 50 years old by this point, in certain cases, Was that like that become a selling point for the other members of Forevermore? Like, as that show started happening, and as you're like, was the idea that are there people in Forevermore that are solely performers or solely writers, or is it, has it become like this cast is now a fully collaborative writing room is on top of
performance? So, there's definitely those who prefer performing and are kind of intimidated by writing. But so the way that we do this is we all get together and we just kind of freeform brainstorm, start writing things out, get some ideas. Everybody contributes to that. Everybody has fun ideas for that. There's a couple members. Everyone's a performer, but not everyone is a writer. There's a couple members who are like a little bit intimidated by the writing process. However, I'm very proud of all of the members of Forevermore because all of them have tried to like start writing. And one of the girls on Forevermore who was always been like, you know, I'm not a writer, but I'm here to perform. I'm here to like help however I can, whatever. For this show was like, hey, I actually came up with a parody song. Do you want to read it and see if this is good? And I read it and I was like, we're putting this in the show. This is amazing. So yeah, it started off with like basically me just writing everything, but now everyone kind of tries and contributes. Everyone contributes like a different amount of writing, but you know, the more we do it, the more comfortable everyone gets. And you know, I keep saying stuff like, you know, oh, I want to write this, or I kind of want to write this, but I don't know. I don't think it'll be good. And I keep saying, just do it. Just write it.
Put it down on paper and we'll fix it if it's exactly not good. Like
we write to edit, right? The whole point of writing is you're going to bring it to the group. We're going to work together to punch it up, make it amazing, but the bones have to be there first. So, you know, just after a year or so of us all working together and doing this stuff and like being collaborative and writing and talking about it. A lot more of the girls who were primarily performers are trying their hand at writing now, which is awesome.
Very cool. That is very cool. And Forevermore is all female.
Yes. It's an all women group.
How many members currently?
We have 6.
Okay. How would you describe a Forevermore show? Like, how would you like sell it to somebody?
Let me think back what I have in our Instagram description. It's like, we're a Baltimore-based sketch comedy group comprised of all women. And we primarily take like a silly satirical take at relationships, dating, and all the trials and tribulations that come with that, along with the friendships that get us through them all. I think that's essentially what I have in our description, but you know, it definitely leans very kind of, you know, datey, relationshipy, being a woman in the world, like heavy kind of sketches, but there is stuff in there for everybody. It's not just primarily for women, but you know, you write what you know, and that's like, of course we're going to write stuff that we know.
No problems with that at all. I ask everybody, we didn't really talk about it at the beginning. Saturday Night Live is like the big sketch comedy presence in America. Do you have a favorite SNL cast member of all time?
Oh man, that's such a hard question. I mean, I absolutely love Kristen Wiig and Maya Rudolph. But, you know, I also really, really love the era with like Chris Farley and Mike Myers and everyone. So I don't know. I would have to say, I guess, Kristen Wiig or maybe Kate McKinnon for now.
I just saw like a thing and that it would have been Chris Farley's 60th birthday.
Stop. Like,
a couple days ago. And that's just, that's, I can't fathom that.
That's so crazy to me. I think a lot, like it's usually anytime I watch another Adam Sandler movie, I keep thinking, man, what if Chris Farley was here? I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah, we wouldn't have to deal with Kevin James because we would have had Chris Farley instead.
Exactly. They would have had like a showdown or something to see who who could be the one. But yeah, actually, no, Chris Farley is definitely like up there. If I had to categorize it into like more like modern SNL cast members versus like some of like the earlier ones, Chris Farley would definitely be my favorite because I love physical comedy. I love sight gags, things like that. And anytime I think about just like a wild physical comedy gag, I think about Chris Farley and stuff. Like, what can I smash? What can I break? And how can I make a prop that's easy to do that? Like, I wrote a sketch where I can smash a guitar specifically because I wanted to be able to smash a guitar. So, yeah.
How are you doing that? Like, what's the magic trick to that for you?
How
many times have you done it on stage?
We haven't yet, but okay. And we actually created 3 different guitars out of cardboard. It looks incredibly real, so that's pretty cool.
Good. I just imagine with it like being cardboard, you want to make sure it's like stiff enough so that like it does have that break point. So I can just imagine like that first swing and that like the heavy part of the body just like bends back as you're swinging and you're immediately like, no, like that would be my like nightmare about it.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I don't know. Well, Christy, who you're going to talk to at one point, she is like our mistress of props where she just, I don't know how she does it, but she just, I tell her, I was like, I need a sword that's shaped like 2 fingers. She's like, I got you. I'll figure it out. And she'll do it.
So you started a team, but like, did you ever take any like sketch writing classes or anything? Or was this just like, I've seen enough stuff. We can figure it out as we go.
So I did take a sketch writing class, but that was after college. I had not taken any classes or anything like that prior to my senior year of college. Like, this is after Maddie Night Live was up and running. I took like a playwriting class as an elective, which was fun. It was within the theater department of JMU. So the teacher was very much into like the very like serious and drama like scripts. And I would come in there with like a really like silly kind of dumb like comedy like script. And she'd be like, yes, but where's the grounding? Where's the reality? And I was just kind of like, huh. I guess maybe I can.
We're entirely in the wrong plane here.
Like. I know, right? Actually, you know what? That did actually help me a little bit in like being able to write some sketch comedy. Like, not all of them. Some of them are just silly and stupid for the sake of being silly and stupid. But every now and then, I will write something that has that grounding to it. There, where it's like silly, the silly heightened reality, but there is like a heart to it and stuff, which I guess that class really helped me to kind of figure that out, which was great. And then I did take a sketch writing class through Big after I had graduated from college because I just needed that comedy fix and I was trying to meet some more people in the scene and everything. And actually through that class, I had a very short stint on Brick Penguins, which is a DC comedy group.
Okay.
Yeah, and they're actually going to be at DC Sketchfest also. And I was like, oh, that's so funny. Well. I had a very, very short stint on Brick Penguins.
Wait, so you went through taking a class at Big? You met with Brick Penguin people?
Yeah, the teacher of that class was the person who started.
Oh, Murphy came up to...
He was teaching the class, and he had asked me to... if I was interested in working with them. So I was with them for like a show. Like I was with them for like 2 shows, but then I started a job working overnights in Baltimore and I was like, I'm sorry, I can't make the drive to DC.
as close to DC and Baltimore are together. It's just at a certain point.
It's a lot.
That's too much travel. It's too much commute. I'm like, don't blame you at all. So, as we're winding down and get a little deeper for it, what's a piece of advice that you would give to a new sketch comedy writer, something that you've learned in your time doing this?
I would say 2 things. Just start writing. Just like, even if you think it's stupid, even if you think, oh, I'm not in the mood or whatever, just start writing. Like, there are so many times where I just sit and start writing knowing full well that this is going to be a shitty, awful, terrible sketch, but I need to like start somewhere, right? I did I challenged myself to do 30 days of sketch one time where I just wrote a sketch every single day for 30 days. And I knew that not all of them were going to be great. But I wanted to like flex that muscle, get in the habit and really get used to just like sitting down and writing. So just write, mm-hmm. just write. And I guess the other thing is understand, part of that also is understand that we write to edit. So like your first thing, your first iteration is never going to be the best one. Keep writing, keep editing, and know that you'll get there. And then the other piece I will say is just if you want to do sketch comedy, if you want to put something together, just literally set yourself a date, book the place, and then have that be your mile marker, because you can write and think about stuff and say, oh, that would be a funny sketch for months without really doing anything with it. Once you set that date, once you like book that space, now the time is happened. Now the clock is ticking. Now you have to get your stuff together. And that's a really good motivator and challenge, I think, especially if you want to just like really get something out there.
Yeah. I'm very much a deadline person. Like, and the fact of having a deadline of being the actual show is massive motivation. Like,
mm-hmm.
And then finally, like, you seem to have done, you know, a ton of work in comedy. Like, I'm a bit floored about starting, you know, the improv club in high school and then starting the sketch comedy team at college. And then, you know, bouncing to do improv and the quote unquote legitimate theater, you know, in their interviewing times for, you know, bringing this group together for Galentine's and Forevermore. So why has comedy been the thing that's like really hooked into you?
You know what? That's a really great question. You know, I'm gonna steal a line from a good friend of mine who does comedy in Baltimore with me. And I feel like this is probably like the best reasoning is comedy is the fastest way to make the most people happy in the shortest amount of time. And I love being on stage. I love performing, but more importantly, I love like just like making people happy and making people smile. And I feel like, you know, in doing improv and in doing sketch comedy and like writing and stuff like that, I realized that, you know, I have the ability to be able to do that, to write funny things and to put funny things out there and like make people happy and laugh and stuff. And that's just something that I really love doing. And not only that, but just I'm just a writer in general. I majored in journalism, all that jazz, whatever. I find that like writing is a really great way for me to take all the thoughts in my head and really like put them out and organize them in a way that mm-hmm. I can really look at that and like process and like whatever. So it's not just for making other people happy, but it's also for making myself kind of happy and comfortable, like that sort of thing. Yeah, I mean, I do my best work like after a breakup or something like that, you know, when I just, a lot of the sketches that were in Galentine's were written post breakup. So.
So it's just one way of getting it out.
Exactly.
I'm not going to say it's cheaper than therapy because sketch comedy can be an expensive thing, but.
Oh yeah, for sure. But you know what? I do both because I need a lot of help.
But it's a form of therapy sometimes for sure.
Totally. Totally.
All right. Thanks, Jenna.
Yeah, thank you.
Forevermore Sketch is performing at DC Sketchfest on Wednesday, March 20th in the 7:30 block, along with Bring Your Own Bob at the DC Art Center. And then they're coming up here to Philadelphia. Both of them, Forevermore and Bring Your Own Bob, Friday, March 22nd, 8 p.m. at the Skinner Studio at Plays and Players for Philly Sketchfest Presents. PhillySketchfest.com for tickets for that show. Follow Forevermore Sketch on Instagram at Forevermore Sketch Comedy. And like I said up top, Philly Sketchfest 2024 will take place with live shows happening from May 31st to June 8th. Submissions to perform live are open at phillysketchfest.com/submit2024, and you can submit your short films for the film festival, which will take place on June 5th. at phillysketchfest.com/film2024. And if you wanted to volunteer or join the staff, head to phillysketchfest.com/volunteer for all that information. My First Sketch is a Philly Sketch Fest production. You can find out more at phillysketchfest.com. Follow Philly Sketch Fest on Instagram at Philly Sketch Fest. The music on this episode is by the band NoNo, which you can check out at nonoband.bandcamp.com. Rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. This is Josh Hyam. Thanks for listening. And go see some comedy.